Blog Talk Radio.
What the hell is it? Oh, there the hell they are. Good evening, and welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay of Spook Show, and formerly the Creepy Castle, and formerly the Ghoul Show. Anyway, none of that matters. I'm here with...
Dave Binkley from Weird Disturbed Bad Movie, and not formally, but still with the Spaceship One program. And we're starting off the show alone, but we generally don't finish that way.
Nah, somebody will fly in here, hopefully CW and or others. We're working on a guest, a very special guest. I'm not dropping any hints until it's in stone. Fogsbane, welcome to the chat. And anyone else who's listening right now, Chris, Jennifer, whether you're in the archive or live, hello. We still have our heads in the cloud. It's the forecast is cloudy with a 90% chance of radio. Now I would say 100%. Yeah, I would say 100% chance, but it is Blog Talk, right?
You added Blog Talk, absolutely. Because you never can be quite that sure with Blog Talk Radio.
So, you saw the ad.
I did.
You felt that one coming.
My.
He felt that one coming. But it's true. They kick us in the bad places every now and again. But overall, I've had a good relationship with them. Because they're sucking up all my money.
I tell you what, I've been connecting up through... the invite on the page, and it's been much more stable than even when I use my Google Google Voice to call in. So
that's right. And there are instances when Gar is well, and we know he's calling. I'm going to do that. I'm going to shoot him an email, have him link that way. It's much cleaner. You sound much better, Dave, this way.
It's a direct connect, so it does make a difference, just like it does when you yourself are direct connected, and it does make a difference.
It do.
When it
doesn't
disconnect you.
for over a year, I was doing nothing but the phone, man. And I'm like, why am I doing this? I need to direct connect.
Yep.
So here we are. And it's time for CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Always a good fit for Saturday listening.
Yeah, the show's a little bit shorter, but we have a wonderful story to go with it. And Fred Gwynne is in tonight's show. Fred Gwynne was actually in 83 of these mystery theaters, Dale. And this is the very last one he appeared in. This one was back in 1982. So that's what it says here, 82. I thought it was a...
Ooh.
Let me see something here. Yeah, that would be right, probably. Yep.
He's still doing some interesting film at the time, too.
Unfortunately, E.G. Marshall was gone, and this is one where Tammy Grimes, and I've been thinking about this because I've been listening to some more of her shows, and it's not that she was that bad, it's just that I couldn't hear her as well as I could E.G. Marshall. He was so much more, put so much more into enunciation and such, that he was clearer and easier to understand. I still think a male voice would have been a little bit better. Hers was okay, but I just noticed that she didn't enunciate as well, and it was harder for me to hear her.
The other piece of it, Dave, I think, is that Tammy Grimes had to follow E.G. Marshall. I mean, the guy is
That's
a tremendous
true.
Host. Plus, after, doing it 6-7 years, he had it down to an art.
Yeah.
His timing, his delivery.
Yes.
You could tell the earlier ones, he was kind of easing into the gig. But then as he goes along, he's just masterful.
Yes. Yeah. He just really gets exactly what it was. What's funny is when they would do these, they'd have the rehearsal in the morning, and Hyman Brown would do E.G. Marshall's part. And as you noticed, the one time we played one where Hyman Brown did the intros and stuff, when he re-released some of these.
Yeah.
There was very similar pacing. Well, it was. And it wasn't until the afternoon when they were doing the take that E.G. Marshall would show up. And basically, with one quick read-through, he would do his part, and that was it. Just sight reading, not well.
Yep, and good old Bob gets in under the wire, joining us in the chat as well. Hiya, fellers. Hi, Fogsbane. Hello, good old Bob. Ugga, bugga, boo, ugga, boo, boo, ugga, or something like that. It's been
it's and again, some of the things that Fred Gwynne never gets credit for because they can only see him as Herman Munster.
Is now he's deceased, isn't he?
He is. Yes, he is.
Sometimes dead is sometimes
Tony
sometimes
Rupp. Yeah.
Sometimes dead is better.
Yeah, don't bury yourself in that pet cemetery. What are you doing?
Yeah, that's not good. Yeah, sorry, I couldn't bear to see Paladin. If something ever happens to him, I don't want to see him again. Like
no,
that.
You don't want to see him afterwards, no.
He's a big dog, too.
They change. I have a DVD of a movie that he did around that time. It's called Law and Disorder. Absolutely hilarious. He would him and Ed O'Neill, and I forget who else all was in it.
Oh, wow.
Very, very funny movie.
Good old Al Bundy.
Good old Al Bundy. Yep.
Old Al Bundy. And I love CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Our program tonight is entitled The Smile.
Yes. And it isn't really putting a smile on the players' face for this particular episode.
No, but I'll tell you what puts a smile on my face, knowing that the lovely and delightful CW has joined us.
Ah, I knew she'd be here.
You're there. We hear you. Yep, she's fooling with switches and connections, but she'll be with us in just a second. Yeah, I want to see how this relates to clouds as we're doing cloudy weekend.
Yep.
And I'll share a horrible story.
Uh-oh.
And spoiler alert, this is Walking Dead, the dead city, all right? They teamed up two characters who should be enemies, Negan and the widow of the guy whose head he smashed in with a baseball bat. Anyway, he grabs an enemy, and all these people are coming to get him, you know what I mean, that are ready to shoot Negan. And he has this guy with a knife at his neck, and he goes, knock, knock. And they're staring at him like, what? He goes, knock, knock, who's there? Butter. Butter who? Butter, get your umbrella. It's going to rain. And he slits the guy's neck. Then he cuts his guts and he starts ranting. He's like, now you better check the forecast tomorrow because he goes, if you don't have your umbrella, there's going to be a hurricane. And he threw the dead body over the railing. It was funny. I find that kind of violence funny. I don't know why. It's kind of like when it's ridiculous, like Monty Python with the Night at the Bridge. It was
just absurd.
ridiculous amounts of blood pumping.
Yeah. The absurdity of it, that's what's so wonderful about so many of those things. So do we have CW here?
Hello?
You there?
Coming in. You're slowly coming in there.
We hear you, sort of.
Better.
There you go.
We're almost home. wrap it in aluminum foil.
Come here. And some aluminum foil.
There you go.
Is that any better? All right.
Much better. There you are.
Much better.
Ah, thank you very much.
There you are.
Have to push that lightning bolt that's coming out of the sky a little to the left, and that'll help the reception marvelously, coming right out of that cloud, right over there.
Is the cloud smile-shaped?
As a matter of fact, it is. It has a smiley shape of a couple of little fangs.
Ooh. My kind of smile.
Oh. Well, make sure it's just not an Amazon cloud, you know.
Oh.
Yeah.
I think I see that cloud. Is it over your house now, Dave? Is it just, you know, kind of hovering over there?
You may have sent it, the wrong direction. So.
Uh-oh.
Yep. No, it was a beautiful day here in Ohio, at least my portion of it.
Oh.
Mine as well. Mine as well.
A high of like 70, what, one or two? Perfect. Sunny.
Sunny, took the wife down to the a Yankee peddler today.
Yeah. And you peddled a Yankee, like a New York Yankee, or like a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court?
Like to peddle a few of those New York Yankees. Actually, like to paddle a few of them too. That would be fun.
Kinky.
Oh my. Oh. Not like those, what is it, Ray Walston's, those damn Yankees, you know?
Oh, there you go.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, and speaking of cloudy with a chance of meatballs.
Yep. And a 90% chance of radio.
Oh, yeah.
It is Blog Talk, right? We ought to get moving with part one of our CBS Radio Mystery Theater offering, The Smile, episode number
1,395, and it comes to us from November 23rd of 1982.
Theater presents...
Got Hyman.
Come in. Welcome. I'm Tammy Grimes. Some mysterious happenings cannot be explained. Some need no explanation. Some are so incredible that even were I to find the reasons, the causes, the whys, the wherefores, it would still escape all understanding. Such a tale the Mystery Theater presents to you today. It is called The Smile.
Whenever I see it, I feel as if it's draining my life away.
You saw it today, Bill? This thing you call The Smile?
I see it every day. I see it now.
I want to see it, too.
Turn around. It's behind you. It's right outside the lighthouse window. Good Lord.
You're right. It's there.
Did you think I was making it up?
Well, I didn't know what to think. It does look like a gigantic smile in the sky.
And it's killing me.
Our mystery drama, The Smile, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by G. Frederick Lewis. It stars Tony Roberts. I shall return shortly with Act One. A ring at the doorbell. A woman puts down her violin and opens the door. A telegram is delivered. The woman's slender fingers slip open the yellow envelope. She glances quickly at the name of the person who sent it to her. It's the name of a man she hasn't seen in 10 years. A man she has been separated from. Her husband. She closes the door and returns inside, reading the telegram aloud. My dear Grace, I'm sure you're surprised to hear from me after all this time. I wonder if you are still teaching the violin. I imagine you have not remarried, nor have I. If we couldn't make it together, I don't think we could with anyone else. The woman puts down the telegram as if she can't bear to read further, tucks her violin under her chin and plays, and then... No. She has to read the rest of the telegram, whether she wants to or not. So we separated because we could no longer live together or needed one another. But Grace, now I do need you. I need your help. I'm not working at all. No writing, nothing. I'm staying with Uncle Wilbur at his place on Chesapeake Bay. Remember, Wilbur, can you come and see me as soon as possible? Grace, I believe I am dying, and only you can save me. Yes, I remembered Uncle Wilbur. Who could forget that crotchety, opinionated old salt, used to having his own way? The same instant obedience he demanded when he was captain of his own ship. I stood on the deck as we crossed the Chesapeake Bay to Wilbur's place. Now a retired sea captain, he tended a lighthouse which kept him near the water and out of trouble. I could see the two of them standing at the point. At least I could make out two figures as the Maryland supply cutter brought me closer and closer to an adventure I never thought I'd live through.
Wilbur, is it still up there?
I thought you were looking at the boat bringing Grace out here to the lighthouse.
Wilbur, I'm asking you something much more important. Is it still up there? Do you see it up in the sky?
Yes, Bill, I can see it. Still there. I thought by now you'd come to terms with the fact that it's always there. But it's not your imagination or mine.
Sometimes it comes and then it goes away again. I was hoping it would go away today.
Hmm? Do you want Grace to see it?
I do, yes. Yes, you're right. That's why I sent for her. I want to talk to her about it.
Well, you talk to me about it. Seems to me we talk a lot about it.
Why doesn't it let me alone? Why me?
I see it too, Bill.
Well, I know you do, Uncle Wilbur. I know, but it isn't doing to you what it does to me. To you, it might be just another strange-shaped cloud in the sky. It doesn't affect you the way it affects me.
Well, that's true. Well, let's get down to the dock. I think the boat Grace is on is about to pull in.
It's killing me, Wilbur. It's draining the life out of me. Whenever it appears, wherever we are, I feel weaker.
I know, Bill, I know. We'll just have a long talk about it with Grace. Let's go down now and help him tie up the cutter.
Of course, at the time, I didn't say one word. But I can tell you now I was shocked. As I stepped ashore at Lighthouse Point, I was so shaken to see how much Bill had changed, I could hardly speak. He was no longer a young man of 40. His hair had turned snow white. He looked 70. He took my suitcase and the cutter cast off. And an hour later, I was alone with Bill, sitting in the lighthouse kitchen, just the two of us, having sandwiches and coffee.
Grace, you look marvelous. I'd quite forgotten what a beautiful girl I was once married to.
Well, actually, Bill, we're still legally married. But I'll take it as a compliment just the same. You make these sandwiches?
I'm afraid not. That's Uncle Wilbur's department.
And what's your department in this lighthouse keeping?
I'm not doing much of anything, I'm afraid. I guess you might say I've gone to pieces, as it were.
Well, that's hard for me to believe. A man like you, always in the middle of things. And you're always off covering a war or a peace conference. Are you doing much writing now?
I'm not doing any. My last assignment that I can remember, for the syndicate was, that's funny, I can't remember.
You can't remember? Was it that long ago?
No, not at all. It's just that it just slipped my mind, that's all. Let's see, it was, Yes, I did a feature on Tibet. That's an extraordinary kind of life they live up there in the mountains, the Tibetans.
No, I read it, I did.
That was a wonderful story, Bill. And you lived up there with them in the Himalayas?
Oh, yes, yes, I did.
For how long?
Yes, I did.
I said, for how long, Bill? How long did you live in Tibet?
What?
Bill? Are you listening to what I'm saying? You keep looking out the window. Is there something out there?
No, no, not there. Not yet, Grace.
What do you mean, not yet? I asked you how long you spent gathering that material in Tibet.
Time passed as it never passed before. I can't say how long, Grace.
And that was the last piece of writing you've done?
Yes, that was it.
But that was over a year ago. What have you been doing since?
I guess you could say I've been running.
Running? Running away?
No. No. Running for my life.
Bill, are you being serious?
Why do you think I asked you up here to the lighthouse? I've never been more serious in my life.
Listen to me. We were married for 10 years, and some of them were good years. Then we separated. In fact, we've lived apart as many years as we've been married. Now tell me, what is it you're running from?
You won't laugh when I tell you. It's the smile. At least, that's what I call it. That's what it looks like.
All right. I'll go along with that. This smile that you've been running away from, what does it look like?
Well, I can't quite describe it because so much feeling goes with what I see. When I see it, Grace, believe me, it is actually as if I am looking into a giant face that is smiling. Only I can't see the rest of the face. I can't see the eyes or the nose. All I see is the smile.
And when did you first see it?
I'm not sure exactly when. As I said, I was in a place where time expands and contracts in an unusual way.
You said you were in Tibet.
Yes. So I can't tell you when, but I know exactly where. I had just left the monastery, the one on the highest peak in the Himalayas, a place that is always in the clouds. The sun, the moon, the day, the night has never appeared there. Only the intensity of the light varies. The people go around like people under glass, like people moving in milk. I think that's why they always wear such bright clothing.
You were telling me when you first saw the smile.
I had an interview with the high priest, and I walked out the door of a stone chapel up a little rise. And I looked up, and suddenly the clouds seemed to separate, and I could see blue sky, which I'd not seen in literally months. And up there in that sky was this faceless face looking down on me. And from that moment until this, unless I close my eyes to shut it out, day or night, I always see it.
You mean you see it now?
Yes.
Have you anyone about this?
You mean other than Uncle Wilbur?
He sees it too.
Well, certainly. He sees it too, just as I do. I brought it here. I brought it with me. Where I am, there it is.
Have you talked to anyone else about it? A doctor, a psychiatrist?
It's not in my imagination, Grace.
I'm not saying it was. I'm just wondering if you had discussed it with anyone, Bill.
I'm not out of my head. It's not a ghost. It's there. But it's what the smile is doing to me that frightens me so terribly.
Well, I should think so.
You still think it's something I'm haunted with. It's more than that. It's killing me, Grace. That's why I need you. I need someone I can trust, someone who once loved me. Who will believe what I say when I say it's killing me? I try to look away, Grace. It draws me to it. It's draining my life from me.
Have you seen it today?
I see it every day. I mean, I know it's there.
Could you see it right now?
Matter of fact, I do. Right outside the window behind you.
Bill, I'm going to turn around. I want to see it, too.
Go ahead. It's clearly visible. It's up there. I'd say about 1,000 feet overhead.
Great Lord in heaven. You're right.
Did you think I was making it up?
I didn't know what to think. It does look like a smile, but it's strange. It's like a shadow without substance behind it.
It doesn't affect you? You're sure?
No, not at all. Is it always in the same spot?
It never is.
What do you mean, does it affect me?
It doesn't make you feel any differently after you've looked at it for a moment? Any weaker?
No, not at all.
It doesn't harm Uncle Wilbur either. Only me.
Where is Wilbur?
Oh, I expect he's outside somewhere. This isn't much of an island. You can walk around it in no time at all. It's only here for the lighthouse, so he won't have gone far.
I'm darned if I know what it is, Grace. Bothers the heck out of Bill. Wish it wouldn't. Some natural phenomenon. That's all I can think.
Uncle Wilbur, Bill says it makes him feel weaker.
He keeps telling me that.
Wilbur doesn't deny the existence of a smile, but he says the idea that it's making me feel weak is something inside my head.
It's there, all right.
Well, on the face of it, I'd say it was some kind of light refraction or cloud density. I don't know why it disturbs Bill as much as it does. But if it's all right with you, Uncle, I'd like to stay on here a few days and see if there's anything that can be done about it.
My dear Grace, I don't know whether Bill has told you or not, but it was my idea. I suggested he send you that telegram. I've always thought you were a sensible person, and we all need your help.
I'm sure there are those listening who already have made up their minds how this can be happening. Three people have seen the smile. Grace, Uncle Wilbur, and Bill. But Bill suffers a debilitating weakening when he sees it. I shall be back shortly, closer to the smile itself. When I return with Act 2.
I could see me getting weaker, depending on who's smiling at me. And why.
I can understand that.
Yep.
Oh, thank you, Blog Talk.
That was Blog Talk?
That's Blog Talk. That's on me.
What the hell are they doing?
That song comes in from time to time. There you go. That's not you.
They're spying on us. They heard there's bad things.
Yeah, there's nothing in the archive, in our archive of sounds that's like that.
No.
I used to look at you and you used to look at me and neither of us were doing that. And then when you listen, that's not something we have there. That's Blog Talk breaking in. Breaking news.
Yeah, they didn't like that 90% joke.
Oh, dear. Oh, gosh.
It's not a joke if it's true.
Interesting thing about this former cast here, gang. Marion Seldes, it was in 206 of the Mystery Theaters. Fred Gwynne, 83. Tony Roberts, 74. The three of them were in a total of 363 Radio Mystery Theaters. I'm wondering how many more episodes that is than some regular radio series, period, you know?
Yeah. Incredible history. This is showing over a 1,000. There's what, 1,400 of them roughly?
Oh, just under 1,400. 1,399, I believe. Yeah.
Oh, all right. Well, that was close.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
With all due respect to our E.G. Marshall, I do like Tammy Grimes' voice. She has that very sort of continental, raspy voice.
We were talking about that just before you came on, and a couple of observations I had is that I have E.G. Marshall had so much more separation. He was some easier to understand between the tone of his voice and his diction, where Tammy Grimes at this point in her career was a little tougher, as far as I'm going to say, to being dramatic as she was to understand.
But still very good. Still very good.
Very good.
Still very good.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And like Dale said, at the same time, you know, it just, you know, you got to follow E.G. Marshall. When you have somebody who's done something for so long, it's just like the next guy that follows Tom Hamilton in Cleveland baseball calling is going to say, oh, man, he's terrible. He's not. He wouldn't be there if he was terrible. But the fact
he's
is,
not
when
Tom
you're,
Hamilton, yeah.
When you're following one of the best out there, you know, and E.G. Marshall became so absolutely tremendous at his part in the Radio Mystery Theaters.
Absolutely.
No question about it.
Well, if you have to get somebody, you might as well be Tammy Grimes. She did great.
Well, Tammy Grimes is a good friend of Hyman Brown, and on top of that, she did probably at least a dozen episodes before, you know, before being asked to be the hostess. So,
Okay, so she had kind of an in.
She had two ins.
Yeah.
One, she dug quite a few, and secondly, she was a good acquaintance of High Brown. So,
there you go.
Outstanding.
Make the most of it, Tammy.
And it could be at this point that he knew that it was coming to a close. He was not ready for it to end. He had other projects he did right after it went off the air, and unfortunately, it was for Voice of America, I think it was, that nobody except New York Public Radio got to air them. I have not been able to catch any of those particular programs, but I'm searching. But he was willing, but they still had several million listeners a night listening to the Mystery Theater.
Incredible. Incredible.
But there's an old sports adage which Dale and I am very familiar with, said, CBS said, we've decided to go in a different direction. Dale, what is that direction? What is that direction they usually take? It's down.
Yeah, downward direction.
Gosh.
The direction is downward.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, prepare yourself. We are about to suck. That's what it means. Tune in. We'll prove it.
Yep.
But,
you may be moving downward, but
tale?
Upward.
Yep. An interesting tale, nonetheless, tonight.
It is. This smile thing is, I'm trying to figure it out, and I can't put it together.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
Yeah,
it's
interesting that two exes are getting to actually being hospitable to each other, you know,
I don't know whether you understand that now, but later on in the show you will understand. Actually, they never actually got a divorce, so they were just separated for as long as they've lived together.
And there are people who have amicable splits. They just go, you know what, we're going in different directions. And before we kill each other, let's break it off now. I've known people that have done that.
I guess so. I've never really understood that aspect, but...
Me neither. It's either work it out or kill somebody. One of the two.
Yeah, kill each other, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Kids, don't try this at home.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my word, my word. If you didn't think I was warped before.
Guess what? He is now.
There you go. As it should be. Well, let's go ahead and continue then with part two of The Smile from CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
Go, go!
Grace
Mormon church, a music teacher has been separated from her husband, Bill, for 10 years. He is a writer, or was, until an assignment took him to Tibet. An assignment from which he apparently never recovered. It affected his mind, aged him, turned his hair white, and ever since he has been haunted by a shape that clouds his days. Something that appears near him that he calls the smile. He has retreated from the world to his Uncle Wilbur's lighthouse on Chesapeake Bay. And it is there that this strange story unfolds.
Uncle Wilbur, I have the feeling that you're not very sympathetic to what's troubling Bill.
That's not so. I'm just sick and tired of seeing the darn thing around. Bill, did you tell her about our 3 weeks off?
No, I haven't.
Grace, I'll tell you. You know, they give us lighthouse keepers 30 days off a year. And someone else is rotated to your spot. So with this smile thing, Bill and I thought, okay, we'll give it a run for its money. See if it really followed him all the way from Tibet. See if it's really dogging his steps. Well, we took 1 week up in the mountains, a cabin of a friend of mine. We went on hikes, went fishing, and sure enough, we hadn't been there but 3 days. It found us.
The smile.
Right, spread across the roof of our cabin.
And then we took a week at the shore. It found us there, but where it really hurt, where I realized it was out to kill me.
Now, just wait a minute, Bill.
Uncle, let him tell it.
Where it really got to move was the week we spent in the city. We saw some shows, visited with some friends of Wilbur's old Navy days.
Buddies I hadn't seen years.
I began to loosen up. It was great for me. I started getting ideas for stories and articles.
Bill thought this apparition had finally left him. Well, on the next to last night, we stopped off at a bar on the way back to the hotel. It was the darndest place.
The bar had no ceiling.
Yeah.
The walls, they went straight up into the sky. You know that glow that hangs over a city at night? There was that. And right there, over my head, grinning down at me, there it was. The smile.
I had a hard time getting him back to the hotel. But I did. People thought he'd had just one too many.
So even when the both of you got away from the bay and the lighthouse, it wouldn't let you be?
No, it's never left me since. I try not looking at it. Sometimes I make believe it's not there, and I feel free. But when it leaves those rocks, where I think it lives way offshore, and starts coming this way, I know it's lying in wait for me, and it won't stop smiling until I'm dead.
Bill, you said something a moment ago about it comes from the rocks.
I'd say for the past 2 months that's where it seems to come from.
And could you find it?
At 5 or 6 in the morning, just about daybreak, it leaves the rocks that are just at the edge of the horizon.
Can you show me from where we're standing?
Oh, there. You see those rocks that jut out just where the sun's going down?
Yes.
From there, no larger than a small black curve on the water. Seems to lie there on those rocks, and then as the sun comes up, it starts towards me.
We went fishing one morning real early. Came chasing after our boat like some giant kite. Chased us.
Good. Then we'll chase after it.
What?
Tomorrow morning, while it's still dark, we'll take ourselves across the bay, right out there to where you say this smile of yours starts from. Oh, Uncle, you've got a boat, haven't you?
Sure have. Great little sailboat. Use it all the time.
Well, that's fine. Then tomorrow morning. Agreed.
Why not? I'm game. See that mackerel sky? That means good sailing weather tomorrow. We'll take ourselves smile hunting.
The following morning, the moon was still out, the bay was calm. Wilbur told me we had over 2 hours before sunrise.
Bill was walking from the house to the dock, his arms loaded with sails and jugs of coffee and boxes of sandwiches I'd made.
It's going to be a great day. It'll be on the water, Grace. I'll tell you that.
So calm. It's like glass. Will there be enough wind to take us clear across where we want to go?
I built this little Red Devil myself. She is so well balanced. A bucket of air could carry her for miles. Speaking of balance, let's wait till Bill gets out of earshot. There he goes back into the house. Grace, if I see sort of unfeeling and unconcerned to you yesterday, it's because I'm trying to act as normally as I can whenever Bill is around me. Now, it's perfectly true that I see that darn shape up there in the sky, and I read you half the people who live on the bay have seen it.
You're saying then, as I do, that it's a phenomenon.
And that's all. It's not out to get Bill. I don't know why he believes it's his own personal devil, out to bewitch him, drain his life away, as he says. And frankly, he's doing all this bewitching to himself.
Okay, he's coming out the door.
No, he's got to go around the back door to lock up. Anyway, that's why when you said, let's take the boat out and head for those rocks and see the dawn smile before it gets up in the morning, I could have shouted for joy. But I had to act cool, as if, why not? Let's see.
I didn't know what else to do. Bill is a young man. He's only 40. And he looks so old and tired. It just hurts me to see him like this.
Mind is a curious thing, right? I think it can influence us any way we want to go, from total sanity all the way in the opposite direction. And it's been known to even stop a heart. I'm worried because supposing Bill has the will to die, this phenomenon which we both see, you too, is he using that to kill himself without knowing it?
We hoisted sail. Bill at the tiller steering, I stayed amidships, and Uncle Wilbur handled the sails. We headed straight for those rocks. The smile hadn't yet put in an appearance, but then neither had this. The lighthouse got further away, and a pinkish glow started to come up over the horizon.
Keep her nose even with the highest rock, Bill. The one that's getting just a touch of sun on it. Grace, any particular ideas what you want to see when we get there?
Well, is that just a large pile of rocks? Has anyone ever been over there? Are there caves, or is it an island? You just really can't tell looking through these binoculars.
Yeah. I was checking all my harbor charts last night, and I hate to confess this to you two landlubbers, but I could not locate those rocks. The nearest marker is buoy number 9, which we'll probably see if we sail around it. Bill, steady with that tiller. I'll ease it off on the sail.
Well, then let's do that, then. Let's sail right around it. If it's an island or a pile of rocks or whatever it is.
Well, we'll do it the best we can. We'll just take it slow and easy and try to keep from running aground.
Wilbur, Grace, there's something pulling at the tiller. It's pulling it out of my hands.
Does it feel like we fouled up, Bill, on a line or an underwater cable? Let the tiller go for a moment.
Maybe there's a wreck down there. I couldn't see.
Down about. Watch out.
Oh.
Grace, stop. We're spinning around.
Oh.
Grab it, Bill. Grab hold of that tiller. Oh. I'm lowering the sails.
Oh, I'm getting that same darn feeling.
What feeling?
What I get when I see the smiles.
Bill, for heaven's sake, will you hold on to the tiller? Keep it steady. We're going around in circles.
It's the same feeling crawling all over me.
But there's nothing there. There's no sign of it. And the sun isn't even up yet. Bill, there is no smile anywhere in sight.
Oh, it's got to be there somewhere. I feel so weak.
Grace,
what?
Make these ropes fast for me.
Okay.
Just wind them around where I started to.
Oh.
I've got to take the tiller.
Bill! What's the matter?
We've hit a whirlpool of are being sucked into it.
Bill's falling across the pillar. He's fainting.
I don't know how long it took Uncle Grober to get control of our boat, to free it from the vortex that was whirling it around. But as soon as we were clear of that, he and I managed to pull Bill amidships. Grober gave the orders of what I was to do with the sails, and I just did what he said. And gradually, we drifted to a shallows where the water was still.
Yeah. Trouble is, we're not moving. Wind's died down. I'll drop the anchor so we won't drift too far. How's our boy, Grace?
I just keep wetting my handkerchief and putting it on his forehead.
How's he breathing?
He's taking these very deep breaths as if he's in a strange kind of sleep. His eyes are tight shut.
Grace, somehow we've got to get this boat moving and get down along the coast as fast as we can to a hospital.
There's no wind.
If we can't use the sails, we'll use our arms. Stowed on the floorboards are two pairs of oars. You help yourself to one and put them in the oarlocks. You know how to row, don't you?
Of course I do.
Good. I'll take this pair and do the same. We'll start due east. Take your pace from me. We're going to head for that buoy. Can you see it?
Mm-hmm.
That's due east. About 200 yards across the bow. The blackberry had number 9 painted on it. From there, we'll change direction southward.
Wilbur, look! Look over there. There's a small red sailboat just like ours with two people rowing, and their sails are down just like ours.
That's a coincidence.
But look at the man and the woman. Wilbur, look at them. The man looks exactly like you. And the woman, she could be me. It's a fascinating concept that somewhere in this world there exist duplicates of ourselves. Taking this one step further, which one of the identical two pays for the other's sins or crimes, or reaps the rewards? Who are those rowing in an identical red sailboat? Is there an identical man lying in a dead faint in the bottom of the other boat as well? And what does this have to do with that peculiar marking in the sky, the smile that has been the nemesis of the man they hope to get to the hospital? I shall return shortly with Act 3.
And we'll be giving you Part 3 shortly, right here on Eerie House Radio.
Yep. Interesting tale. Now they see something.
What is this thing?
Is it a mirage? Is it what?
Well, if so, it seems to be a shared mirage.
That's true.
So how can that be?
What do they call those things? Mass
hallucinations?
Hallucinations, yes. Yes.
Hallucinations. Yep.
Unless you're Popeye, then they're hallucinations, right?
Yeah, I've never heard of mass hallucinations other than those concerts back in the in the 70s. Uh-huh. There'd be some of that business going on. But,
Yeah, it didn't say what they ever talked about. Yeah, you're right.
Something like that, I don't know. For some reason, I don't remember.
Very intriguing.
Yes, it is. Is it alien? Is it mass hallucination? Hypnosis? Aliens? Ooh, I don't know. I don't know what way to think on this one. This one's a good mystery tale.
I don't know. It is. Is it aliens? Is it interdimensional beings? Is it some sort of ghost? Demon? The list is endless. Republican?
You already said demons. Okay.
Yeah.
Wait, I didn't say that.
The opinions on Eerie House Radio are...
I think we're about to get another cut in from Blog Talk Radio for that one.
Yeah, we'll hear that awful music now. Thanks, DW.
Oh, dear. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
That's
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Okay. The,
we're not taking sides, neither with the demon craps or the Republic creeps. It's where we're not for either. Because they ain't working for neither one of us, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
Yes, none of the Republicans approve this message, so there is
that's right. Republic creeps.
Yeah. And that's...
We should not be calling each other names like that. We are all one family. We are all one family.
That's why we should be calling each other names like that. You ever see a family at Thanksgiving? Give me that drumstick.
Yeah, there you go.
Give me that...
It is like some families, come to think of it.
The biggest fight is over the wishbone.
Yep.
that's
a worthwhile cause.
Absolutely.
Fighting for food.
There you go. Yeah.
I'll wrestle you for the drumstick.
I'll give me the drumstick. Okay, I'll trade you a drumstick for a slice of yam pie, a candy apple. Pie and broccoli.
That's not bad.
Mm. Or don't forget, Mom. Yeah,
broccoli.
Don't forget broccoli.
Other names now. Broccoli.
Oh, broccoli. Oh yes, I used the B word. I'm sorry.
That's your favorite fruit.
I should have gone for Grandma's heart-stopping five cheese layered mac and cheese dish. You know, the kind that's baked in the oven, and then they put whip up egg and put egg right on top of it, along with a little more cheese, and pop it in the oven. It's bubbling all over the place.
Mm. I think my heart rate just went up.
I think. Yeah, Blog Talk's cholesterol level went up to about 5.10.
Yes.
And that's Fred Gwynn. Isn't that Fred Gwynn's voice I'm hearing?
Yes.
Yep, that is Fred Gwynn.
Yes.
Oh, yes, Pet Cemetery. Mm-hmm.
You know he's deceased, right?
No.
As long as they bury him in the Pet Cemetery, he's okay.
Sometimes dead is better. Oh, God.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Twice I had to pull that one out. You weren't with us earlier.
That impression is just too good, Dale. That impression is too good.
That is. That's spot on, actually.
We did a skit like that once on Spook Show. It was a blending of Pet Cemetery and My Cousin Vinny.
Oh, yeah.
It was great.
The two youths.
Yeah, and actually, Dave, Uncle Vic helped me on that one. Uncle Vic.
Did he really?
Yes, he did.
Wow.
Yes. God rest his soul, who he passed a few years ago.
Yes.
Uncle Vic. Yeah, I was lucky to have him come on the show a few times over at Amherst City Cable. Many years ago, but long ago and far away.
Ah, yes. Cable. What was cable? You mean before everything was streaming, there was a cable?
That's how I started with Spook Show on cable. And then started doing the internet thing, and that was real fun. And who knows what's next?
Who knows?
As retirement approaches.
Who knows? Oh, the evil,
Oh, they don't want to see me with time on my hands. Oh no, I know the teachers never liked it.
Oh gosh. So
you can imagine there'll be deviltry afoot.
Devil may care. But shall we return back to?
We shall.
Yeah,
let's wrap up.
Because
we have fun. We have a few other little things to share. I'm dying to find out what this smile thing is. We got to find out with part three from CBS Radio Mystery Theater. And a go.
And a go.
A man and a woman are rowing a Deccan sailboat as quickly as they can, because in the center of that boat lies another man with white hair, a man in danger of losing his life. This man is Bill Fenchurch, who has been pursued since he left Tibet by a form in the sky he calls the Smile. Bill is certain, positive, that this smile is draining away his life, whether imaginary or not. The two at the oars do believe his life is in their hands.
Watch it, Grace. Careful as you row. Not only because something might hit us below the waterline, but in this half morning light, distances are deceiving.
Yes, but what about that? We're a boat being rowed by people who look just like us.
Possibly. Possibly. Yeah. Just like the desert, maybe. A mirage.
Grace. Grace.
Bill's coming, too.
Oh.
His eyes are open.
Yeah. How do you feel, Bill?
Kind of shaky. What happened?
Hey, you stay right where you are. You're getting a ride. The wind died down, so Grace and I are using a little oar power.
What dumb thing did I do?
Oh, I wouldn't call it dumb. We just got caught up in a whirlpool back there. And you lost control of the tiller. I'm not sure whether it came around and hit you and knocked you out, or if you fainted for some other reason. Anyway, now we're shipshape again, and we're heading back.
So, we're running away again?
No, we're not running from the Smile, if that's what you mean. The sun came up about an hour ago, and we didn't see it. The Smile never showed up.
Hey, say, Grace, I feel a wind coming up. Ship your oars and head for the tiller.
All right.
I'll run up some sail, and you keep her steady on buoy number 9.
So, you guys didn't see it. We're not running from it. I can't last much longer. Why are you lying to me? It's taking me with it. Look up in the sky, will you? And admit it's there. Admit it. We're lost.
The Smile was there, spreading the edges of its evil mouth over the top of our red mast like a two-sided pennant. I had never seen it that closely. It seemed to be talking, wordless movements coming out of its opening and closing mouth. When we shipped us along, I kept my eye on the marker buoy. I knew we had to get Bill to the hospital, but his life was in danger.
Hey, you there! Red sailboat! Watch out where you're heading!
Robert, it's the same red sailboat we saw before!
Can't you see us? In all my years on the water, I've never seen anything like it. They act as if they own the bay. Come charging across our bow like that. Say, Grace, if you hadn't hung on to that tiller, they would have cut us in half.
It's just pure dumb luck. I didn't know what I was doing. I was so mesmerized by the fact that it was the same red sailboat we'd seen before.
They didn't care. They absolutely didn't. And you know what I think? I don't think they even saw us.
But there's three people on board. You did notice them, too.
No, I can't say I did. I'd have recognized any of them. I would have reported them.
But two men and a woman at the tiller. I could see it all so clearly. Two men, one standing by the mast, raising the sail, just like you were, Wilbur, and the other man sitting down in the center of the boat, just like Bill's doing. And the woman at the helm, she had on the same T-shirt that I'm wearing. Identical. Blue with red stripes.
Are you sure? You saw all that in that instant?
And the man sitting down midships had the same white hair Bill has. So what do you make of it?
Well, I sure don't know.
That boat and the people in it were duplicates of ourselves. Everything was the same. I watched them as they rounded the rocks, doing in reverse just what we had done. But there was just one difference. The smile wasn't over us anymore. It was floating over them. Now, who were they? Were they us? I don't know how long it took. It seemed hours. But we made it down the coast, pulled into a town dock, and Uncle Wilbur and I, somehow between us, got Bill to the hospital. We waited. They'd taken him immediately to intensive care. And finally, a doctor came out and took us into an office.
Which one of you is related to William Fenchurch?
I am, Doctor. I'm Grace Fenchurch. Is he all right?
Are you his wife or his sister?
Well, actually, I'm his ex-wife. Not even that. We separated 10 years ago. We each went our own way, but we're still legally married.
Then it's to you, Mrs. Fenchurch, that I must offer my condolences.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
There was nothing we could do, believe me. The entire emergency staff did everything humanly possible. I'm still trying to piece together what could have caused Mr. Fenchurch's death.
But tell me, how did it happen?
He was barely alive when you brought him in, and, well, his heart simply gave out. There was no way of reviving him. How old a man was he?
Bill was just 40.
Did you say 40? You mean he was only 40 years old?
Yes, 40.
Responded like a man who'd undergone shock or some complete trauma. I'm sorry, Mrs. Fenchurch. There's no point in your remaining here now. If you and Mr. Wilbur would care to return tomorrow, we should have much more information.
Next thing I remembered was it was morning. I couldn't quite absorb what had happened. I got out of bed. It was not my own bed. I went to the cabinet where I keep my music and my violin. It wasn't there. And then suddenly I remembered, of course, I wasn't home. I had received a telegram from Bill, whom I hadn't talked to in 10 years. Please come to Uncle Wilbur's lighthouse, it said. I think I'm dying, Bill had written. And then it all became clear.
Grace, you up?
Yes, Uncle Wilbur, I'm up. I'm just dressing. I'll be right down. Of course. It was early in the morning, and the three of us were going to take the red sailboat and go out to some offshore rocks to find something. What was it we were after? I got dressed, and I came down to the lighthouse kitchen. It was still dark outside. Wilbur had made coffee.
Oh, Grace, I was just about to go up to your room and knock on your door. Don't you remember? We wanted to get an early start, to sail out to the rocks. Bill overslept, too. Had to wake him up. He's getting dressed now.
Wilbur, you are going to think that I've taken him by my senses, but I simply cannot remember why we planned this excursion.
You're joking. It was your idea.
It was?
The smile. Now you remember? The smile that's been haunting Bill ever since he came back from Tibet.
Oh, of course. Oh, please forgive me. I knew it was something.
Huh?
Now, Uncle Wilbur, do you believe in second sight, a precognition?
A precognition?
Having seen something in advance to its happening?
Yeah.
What? I don't want to go out on the boat this morning. And I don't want you to, or Bill. I think that we should all stay here.
Well, talk about a woman changing her mind. Would you mind telling me why, Grace?
Yes. I either know of something that will happen to the three of us, or I've dreamed something that I don't want to happen. As we sat there, I recalled every incident as it would be happening. From our conversation on the dock as we loaded the boat, to Bill manning the tiller, to arriving at the rocks, getting caught in the whirlpool, then Bill fainting, the wind dying on us, and our starting to row, and being almost cut in two by an exact duplicate of our red sailboat in which we were traveling. Three people, exactly like ourselves. And then finally ending up at the hospital. Too late to save Bill's life.
Well, I don't know what to say about all this. It certainly was an extremely vivid nightmare.
So you, for one, don't believe it'll happen?
Of course not. We are going to track down the smile as agreed to yesterday. You had a vivid dream, Grace. And that's all it was.
Well, it's hard for me to believe it was only a dream. I wish I could have convinced you.
Good morning, Grace. Good morning, everybody. It's going to be a beautiful day.
Oh, thank the Lord you're alive, Bill.
You know, I said exactly the same thing to myself when I got up this morning. By the way, I've been standing on the stairs for a few minutes, and I want you to know I heard everything you were telling Wilbur.
I'm glad you did, Bill. I thought it very entertaining. Didn't you? The way Grace told it, one could almost believe it.
You can believe it, Wilbur, because I had the same dream. If it was a dream.
What?
I want to show you both something. Now, Wilbur, to your knowledge, I haven't been out in the skiff since we painted it, have I?
You mean since we painted red? No. No, we haven't. I'm not sure it's completely dry this morning, but we'll see.
When you called me and woke me up this morning, there was red paint on my sheets. I looked at my hands. I'm turning them over now so you can both see my palms. Look, that's red paint. Well, I must have been holding the tiller.
I don't understand this at all.
Wilbur, I'll have that cup of coffee, too.
All right. That red paint in your hands could have only gotten there if... But why don't I remember if I was there with the two of you, just as Grace says it happened? Here's your coffee.
Thanks, Uncle. Why don't you remember, huh? I don't know if you don't.
Uncle Wilbur, would you take another look at Bill?
What for?
Look at him closely.
Well, I'm sure he looks pretty good. In fact, better than I remember seeing him.
Well, I feel very good. Strong. Raring to go.
Bill, you look 1,000 years younger than when I got here.
Say, what are you doing here anyway, Grace? Not that I'm not all for it. It's a nice surprise.
You don't remember inviting me here to Uncle's lighthouse?
Yes, I do, sort of. Or do I?
Bill, this dream or whatever it is that we lived through, you and I, very close to the end of it, an identical little red sailboat crossed ours and took with it what you used to say had been haunting you.
Oh, yes, the smile in the sky. I wonder why that upset me so much then.
And in that other duplicate red boat were three people. Duplicates of me and of Wilbur and of you. The old you. The old Bill who was sick and who needed me. was in that other red sailboat which disappeared and which we never saw again. And why it existed, I don't understand. But what I do know is that you are here and very much alive. And your eyes are sparkling. And you look very distinguished. A young man with white hair.
Thank you. Thank you.
In fact, I'd say you are the Bill Fenchurch I remember when you and I were first married.
Well, yeah, he does. Looks like a man with a new lease on life.
Well,
I feel that way. I sort of feel like life is something to smile about.
I think it's pretty safe to say that what we have just heard is not an identical dream as dreamt by two people. I'd say that it did happen. And somehow everyone concerned is given a second chance. And as for that mysterious, fateful entity that appeared as the smile, that sort of worries me. Before ringing down the mystery theater curtain, I'd like to say just this. That if somewhere in the world there is such a cloud casting its shadow as the smile, that it's smiling at someone else, not you or me. I shall return shortly.
When I was a kid, Thanksgiving dinner was fun. All our relatives would come with part of the dinner. Mom cooked the turkey. Someone else would bring a vegetable, salad, or dessert. And Aunt Helen, well, she was my favorite relative. She always brought the Whitman sampler. Everything in that sampler was delicious. And you know, my favorite chocolates back then.
Okay. That was an effective tape there as we wrap up.
Oh, it cut out, did it, eh?
Yeah, it just died.
Oh, yay.
That was a...
Yeah. How timely was mentioning, you know, family gatherings, and people also would kill each other over that Whitman sampler.
Way back in our
first year of Weirdness Radio, we called it the Hitman sample. Samplers.
And, yep. Yeah, if you reach for the wrong thing, you're going to get hit.
Oh, yeah. And if you leave one of those weird, creamy, strawberry-centered ones, you're really asking for trouble.
Yeah, I did not like the ones that had fruit in them. I'm sorry. Like cherries?
No.
And I love cherries. Normally.
No, that was just...
Not on my chocolate. Don't
no. Not like that, anyway. Ew.
It's unspeakable horrors.
But we actually do have something we could probably learn from this, if we had to.
Yeah, one of the things I've learned is to be prepared. That would be one thing I've learned. Because if I was prepared, you would have already heard... Eerie House Radio stumbles through and proudly presents A Garrulous Moral of the Story.
Apologies to Gar. They tell us to never trust a smiling cat. To that, we must add, never trust a smiling cloud. That's it.
You tell him, Slim.
So now the question is, was that a good cloud or a bad cloud?
It's hard to say. I was starting to think maybe there was some time travel aspect to this, you know what I mean? And they're seeing themselves in the future or past or something. I don't know. I couldn't.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, as what good old Bob said, this is a head scratcher.
It is. And sometimes those are the best. Sometimes I like an open ending.
Yeah. At Twilight Zone had a few of those, and they were well worth the time spent with them. Absolutely.
Yeah. Some people get aggravated at open endings. They've got to have that closure.
No.
But I think if it calls for it, it's good to have an open ending.
I remember one of the best open endings on that Twilight Zone I can think of was the one that they did where they went back and they were in a plane. They went back in time. You saw the dinosaurs, then they came back again. Then
yes.
And they came back, and it was the 1929 World Fair. And so basically,
yeah, you never knew if they got back to the proper time,
well,
I think.
With the narration that Rod left, it says, basically, he says, so if you look up at the sky and you hear of a 743 or whatever it was at that time, it's sounding like it's just about running out of fuel. It may be. Yeah. From that plane, you know, leaving it that open is that they went up one more time. They were going to hit a time bubble. They didn't know where they were going to end. And then it left up, maybe it's where you are right now.
Ooh.
So I thought that was a great, great ending. Never told you, but told you, hey, could be.
Yep.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. I mean, it does. Usually, I'll be honest, I'm not a huge fan of open endings, but that one was tour de force because it's just saying, No, don't leave like that. I
want to
know.
Yeah, everybody wants a side ending that it goes up and it comes back down to their own time. Everybody wants that. But it was so much better that it wasn't.
I think so.
Yeah. I'm going to have to look that one up. Do you know the title of that particular Twilight Zone?
I will have to look that one up. It's funny because it's interesting on that episode. That this much I can tell you is that the reason Rod wrote it was because one of the like Pan Am was about to get a new demo for their pilots and training, and so they were going to destroy it. But they offered it to Rod if he could come up with a story for it. And so what he did is he got on the phone with his brother. He had the idea of what would happen if you would go up, if a pilot would see these things. So he called his brother, Robert Serling, who was an author and a pilot. And they spent the night coming up with how would you actually talk if you looked out and saw a dinosaur. How would you guys actually talk to each other there in the cockpit?
Did you know they used footage from The Lost World for that?
The old silent Lost World, yes. Yeah.
That's why that looks so terribly familiar. Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Yes, yes, yes. Your eyes did not deceive you.
excellent. But yeah, oh my gosh. So Rod Serling, so the genetics just didn't stop with Rod Serling. His brother did some stuff. Rod Serling was, writer.
Yeah, Robert Serling was more of a novel writer, where Rod was really built for television. He really was.
Television, and he was also, his brother was a pilot, and Rod Serling also was a boxer. He was not a big man, and I just can't see him
in the
ring.
There were different weights to boxing.
Yes,
I know, but still, seemed like a
he's in the midget league.
Well, he was in the Marines and the Asian part of the war, so.
I thought you had to be kind of bigger to be a Marine sort of thing,
That helps. I've known some diminutive Marines. Tough as nails, too.
Oh, the diminutive Marine. Okay, flashback. Does anyone remember William Shatner's parody, The Mute Marine?
No.
Saturday Night Live.
Oh, okay. Mm. I didn't see that. That's the one where he told everybody. Is that the episode where he told everybody to get out of their parents' basements, live life?
And get a life. Get a life. That's the one. Yep.
Oh, wow.
He did the parody of The Mute Marine and Get a Life on Saturday Night. Classic. Epic. Iconic. And we're still listening. People are still stuck in their parents' basement.
Yep. That's right. At least I have the decency to be in my own basement.
No, you bought your own basement. I'm not coming out of the basement. I'm going to buy
There's no house. There's just a basement.
There.
No house. Just a basement.
And technically, you really don't have to come out of your basement. Just, you know, get electricity, get a computer, get some Wi-Fi. Nope. Don't even have to pay for the Wi-Fi.
Check. Oh, no, I do pay for the Wi-Fi. Yeah.
And work a remote job, and you can stay in your basement forever.
I get check. That's kind of where I'm at. I like being a cellar dweller.
Ah, yes. Cave dweller. Troglodyte.
Yeah, got to find a radio. Got to find a radio.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. But do we perhaps have time for a little spinning of the wheel, perchance?
Why, yes, we do.
Oh.
If you care.
Well, I do care. Let's see, I'll just make my way across the room, up the tree, leap over the roof, and spin to win.
Very athletic.
Around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
Genius in his own backyard. It says here on our calling card, have rocket. We'll travel. Our rocket ship is one they cast it off. Just a dud that never blasted off. That's the reason science passed it to us. You may think that we've gone mad. We know we have, but is that bad? So let's prepare the launching pad, I say. Have rocket, we'll travel away.
Science gathers its strength and stands ready to hurl a metal bird into the cold but inviting space beyond our tiny world.
A rocket! Somebody dropped a rocket!
You think it belongs to somebody?
Hey, maybe it's lost.
I can't believe we got this far. To think our rocket shot this far. It's Venus, boys, and here we are. Admit it! We did it!
To top it off, when we descend, we meet our two-eyed, one-horned friend. And ain't he just a living end?
He's purple!
He's people!
Remember, men, we're on another Earth, far away from good old Mother Earth. If he's not our friend and brother, we're dead.
Suppose these people rise in storm.
Suppose they're not a higher form.
Well, boys, let's keep the engines warm in case.
Have rocket, we'll travel in space.
Ladies and gentlemen, our guests of honor.
Hello. Oh, my shoe.
Can't you change?
Oh, out of here.
We paved the way to outer space. We even helped the human race. And now we tell you face to face, my friend. We've done it. You've had it. The end.
Had that laying around there.
Wait a minute. I think I see a talking unicorn over there, Dale.
Another one?
Oh, wow.
Oh, it was in the movie, Have Rocket Will Travel. He ran up against that talking unicorn, remember?
Yeah, in fact, they referenced him in that little ditty.
Yeah, they did. Yep.
Yeah, I had that laying around. Hey, I thought, no, it'd be fun.
That was fun. CW, to answer your question, The Odyssey of Flight 33 is the episode of Twilight Zone.
Oh, thank you. The Odyssey of Flight 33. Putting that down on things to watch.
Yes, that's a fine, fine episode. They all are, really. You can't find one that sucks. You just can't.
You can find one that isn't as good as the other, but it was still better than anything else on television at that time.
It really was. It really was. A tremendous show.
Yes, that's a wonderful homage to the Twilight Zone. You can't find one that sucks.
No. Yeah. Try as you might.
Yep.
Some are slightly less awesome than others. How about that?
What's funny is one that I think is not one of the awesome ones that so many people think do, the one about the radio that plays the old things and he goes back in time. I think it was just way too much foreshadowing for me that it was just too easy to guess. And I hated the Twilight Zone that I could guess, you know?
Okay.
Hey, that reminds me. Has anyone ever seen the movie? It's actually pretty good. It has... Oh, my gosh. It's called The Next Voice You Hear.
Yes.
And you know the one I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. I'm trying to think of his name.
Yeah, he was in the movie Them.
Yeah, and he was in I think he was in a Twilight Zone or two.
I think he probably did do a Twilight Zone.
Oh, which guy was Them? What character did he play in Them?
Oh, he wasn't James Arness. Not James Arness. He was the other one. One who goes into the tunnel to pull the kids out.
Okay,
and the aunt gets them in the mandibles.
Yep.
James Whitmore.
And he was in the old man in the cave for Twilight Zone.
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it was very interesting, The Next Voice You Hear. Very well done.
Yeah, that was kind of, I don't know, for a bit there, that was kind of a spooky sort of, you know,
And it's one that I don't think the movie did real well in the theaters, but again, it's another one that kind of left things up in the air at the end.
Yes. Speaking of leaving things up in the air and radio.
Yep. I cannot tell if Gar is going to have his show live or not. If not, I'm sure he'll have a vault show. That'll be coming up in 1 minute and 47 seconds or so. Right after we wrap it up here. It's time to go back to the movies, gang. That's right. You ready for this? You ready for this? We're back into sci-fi. Day of the Triffids, and the movie was released 60 years ago in 1963. So in a little two-parter, I mean, it's a two-night deal. That's Friday and Saturday, parts 1 through 3 and 4 through 6 of Day of the Triffids.
Yep, BBC turned it into a radio play. It was a six-part radio play, which we will be sharing next week.
I wonder if they'll have any of the original actors.
Generally, they didn't because they didn't want to pay that. So we'll see.
Yeah, just stop by the ticket office. It's free, but we just want to count heads.
Yeah, there you go.
And hide a couple of your friends in the trunk just for old time's sake.
There you are. And remember, we'll have the huge tub of popcorn with the butter-esque flavoring.
Yes, you'll have to get your own from your kitchen.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And her.
When next we meet in Frankenstone.
Good night, everybody. Inside the
store. Don't come alone.
Can you dig it?
Damn, I can dig it. I can really dig it.
There we go. A little bit late, but he got the door closed. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, David Triffitt. Good, 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 good. I remember that, seeing that for, I think it was the first time on television, maybe. And
probably,
I thought it
yeah.
was an amazing concept of why he did not get affected by the meteor shower, so he was able to at least fight off the Triffids.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, just goes to show, you know, just, you know, when you have a meteorite shower, just sleep through it and watch it online.
See, if I still had a streaming channel, it could show that, because that's a public domain movie, I believe, Day of the Triffids.
It is. I believe so, yeah.
It is.
Yeah. Here's another Twilight Zone that James Whitmore was in. One of the few hour ones I really, really like. On Thursday, we leave for home. It's a great hour-long Twilight Zone.
Ooh.
Yeah, those are hard to find. You don't see them too often. Pluto's running every Twilight Zone except the hour-long ones.
Except the hour-longs, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. They're running them pretty regularly, like every weeknight. They start at like 7:30, 8 o'clock, and they'll run till midnight. And then at midnight, it's Outer Limits.
Mm. You know what I've always found interesting? We ought to have a show about that. I know you did on a Creepy Castle once. I was not able to call in because I had guests here. But you had a thing on a night for Twilight Zone and Outer Limits. And what I find interesting is that those people who love Twilight Zone also love and respect the Outer Limits. But people who love Outer Limits first, they don't care as much for Twilight Zone.
It's odd. Maybe because those people are more... Mm. Sci-fi. There really wasn't too much supernatural in Outer Limits. It was almost purely sci-fi.
Right.
Maybe,
and I think
maybe that's the disconnect where Twilight Zone could be almost anything unusual. It,
yeah, because they had some comedy ones, like Penny for Your Thoughts and the one about they brought back Shakespeare, one of the hour-long ones where they brought back Shakespeare and to write for television. You know, it was just... There were some, the one Buster Keaton won. You know, there were times that they did some comedies, and that's where I think the amazing Steven Spielberg's Amazing Stories was a lot closer to Twilight Zone in many ways, except that there was a drama, then there was a comedy, then a drama, then a comedy, then a drama, then a comedy. They did that all the time, where... Really, in the Twilight Zones, it was just a comedy snuck in every now and then.
Yeah, or a lot of comedic elements, like the one with Carol O'Connor and the guy from The Fugitive, whose name escapes me right now, where they kept running the time back and forth. They were playing a murder scene, a confrontation between a guy and this woman, where she shoots him, and at first she kills him, then they run time back, and they stop the bullet, and they run time back, and they keep changing stuff. And it's kind of comical.
Okay.
And then they're going to get in trouble with their bosses for fooling around with time too much.
Yeah. But yeah.
Pretty good.
Leave that time machine alone. Bad.
Yeah.
Bad.
Yeah, it's bad. You create all these paradoxes, and it's bad.
There was something like that I saw in the new Twilight. For most of the new Twilight Zones, the hour-long ones that were streamed, I only watched like the first five or six of them. I wasn't real impressed except for one where the lady had like a VHS recorder, and every time something bad would happen, she would play it, rewind it back a little bit and start playing. And then all of a sudden it would pick up at that point. But, and so she tried to correct what was going to happen. It would always lead them to something worse. So it was just, I thought it was that Rod would have liked that one.
That's a neat idea.
And then at the end, she dropped the camcorder and broke it, and they were just stuck where they were, you know.
Yep.
So I think Rod would have liked that one. But the other ones, they were just stories that were okay, but would have been better had they been in a half-hour format. Even Rod, I don't think, was necessarily really, really happy with the hour format.
Yeah. I mean, you do get a chance for more character development, but a lot of his stories, you got the characters right out of the gate.
Yes.
You knew who they were and what they were about.
Right, exactly.
This is true. I always admired that, you know, instead of this long, drawn-out process. Perhaps that's why I'm so impatient, because once you've had that and you find out that, yes, a writer can introduce you to that character, get that character right away. You know, I think there was the same flavor that Richard Matheson had, that same sort of thing when he wrote for Twilight Zone, and he carried it on when he wrote for Night Stalker and for other things as well, The Last Man on Earth. You know, I mean, yeah, we get flashbacks of his life after the vampire thing occurred, but you dive right into him. You know, you don't have to wait page after page after hour after hour. Okay.
No, and even when there are multiple characters, like in The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street, you already knew what each neighbor, what their personality quirks are and who they were.
Yeah, they brought those out right away, you know?
Yes.
They did.
See, I love writing like that. Oh, I think you're inspiring. Maybe I should take a writing course in college again. Yeah.
I wish I had the discipline to write like some people, like Dave. Because it is a discipline, isn't it, Dave? You've got to have something of a regimen and an approach.
That's why I consider myself more of a hack than a writer, because I write when I'm coming down to deadline. The radio plays were finished up usually just before we started to record them, you know, and things like that. So I had to have that deadline to get that thing written.
That's how I did Spook Show. I made myself go in once a month, so I would do a show a month. I'd make myself write it out, plot it out, and go in and shoot it.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of the pulp writers were quote-unquote hacks as well. I mean, what's-his-face who created Conan? He cranked out stuff all the time. Of course, that's the only way he could make any money.
Robert E. Howard,
He looked at it as a job. You know, like Stephen King sits down and writes 8 hours a day, whether it's garbage or something that's good. And I think most of your writers that I consider true writers, like Maxwell Grant, it was a guy that sat down and spent every other moment he had writing something. You know, it just that was their job. And I don't, although they put out a lot, that doesn't make them a hack.
Yeah.
So the definition of a hack is, you know. So you define a hack as someone and say, oh, I've got 5 minutes to get this story done. That's every college student that's ever lived.
Yeah, that's happened to my son down at Ohio State. He whenever he needed a better grade, he took something that he knew that he learned from watching me or working with me, even with the radio plays and stuff. And so he took this one on story writing, and he'd get there like half an hour before the class started, sit on the floor and write out an idea real quick. And then he presented in class, and he had the theater prof chasing him around for two to three quarters, just trying to get him to change his major because they saw that in him.
Yeah.
So they wanted him to go into the CR, the fine arts.
Yeah, as a writer mostly. Yes, he's doing a lot better where he's at. He's a head of all internet and technology for the Strongsville City School. So he's doing a lot better than he ever would have done as a writer.
I don't suppose you could bend his ear to get a few finer points on how to increase your Wi-Fi range.
I'll see if I can see if I can find out something for you.
Does he recommend a particular variety of tin foil to use?
Tin foil.
Does he recommend the tin foil hat on the actual device or on the user's head?
I think you want the nonstick stuff, CW. Yeah.
The nonstick?
Yeah. Try that.
I'll give it a go. You know, at least once. You know, should I use the dollar store variety or should I use the Kroger store variety? I mean, one never knows.
Yep. Yeah, I don't think you need the actual Reynolds wrap. I think the store will be fine, but you got to use the nonstick. You know,
nonstick. Okay. We'll put a jumper cable
around here. We have the great value version. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Should I use the jumper cables as well? You know, hook that onto the device, onto that.
There you go.
Onto the car antenna, hope there's...
Get a jumper cables, like, for a car, and then hook up to, like, a radio tower. There you go.
Oh, yeah. I can make my own Rube Goldberg Wi-Fi antenna.
There you go.
Range 10 miles away.
Two tin cups and a string. You ever do that as a kid, Dave?
Yeah, it wasn't successful, but we did it. My buddy Bob Kirby lived two houses down, and so we went across to the back where the fence was, and we strung it across the two, the 1 yard in between, and then you'd put your ear to it, and the person on the other one would have to be yelling so loud into the can that you could hear it without.
Yeah, you didn't need the can.
Yeah, you didn't need the can and the string.
Yeah.
So that lasted about one day, and we said, okay, snip the wire. We're done here.
Yeah.
Oh, why didn't you just do odd jobs and buy some walkie-talkies?
Well, you know what? Thinking about that, if we would have used wire instead of string, it might have actually worked.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe it's the kind of string you use too.
You know,
if it's a big fuzzy ropey thing, then probably not so much. But something maybe thin and tight, like fishing wire, or a very thin.
Exactly.
Did you get it to work? Is that what I'm hearing?
No. No. I put it down and decided to make rockets out of blue tip matches. You know, like the old wooden stick matches. You cover them in foil. You take you put a pin next to the matchstick for an exhaust pipe, you know, and you just set that like on a picnic table or something, and light a lighter or something underneath the match head. When it exploded, it would create thrust, and that matchstick would go flying. Put the tin foil on.
My problem I had hung out with ethical people. I mean, there were ways where you could use your phone and make phone calls that wouldn't register so you wouldn't get charged for it.
Ah, I like that.
Yeah, I mean, for example, right now, I'm calling and I'm on a phone. This phone is an older phone. It doesn't have a carrier, but it picks up Wi-Fi. Therefore, I'm calling you for free.
There you go.
And we grew up with pay phones.
Actually, did you see the movie, the original movie, War Games? That that he used, putting that piece of metal onto those things, that was real. That was one of the hacks.
A real hack.
What's his face? Steve Wozniak, the Woz from Apple Computer. He and Steve Jobs built a device, and they sold these devices where you could go into payphones, hook up this box, bypass it, and you make tons of free calls.
I like those guys.
I like them too.
Jamming it to Ma Bell.
Yeah, give them what for. Take that. Take that. Take that.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, take that, Verizon and T-Mobile. I'm not paying for this call, man. It's free. So deal with it.
There you go. I couldn't be prouder.
Yes, brings a tear of pride to the eye. Gentlemen,
We lost you.
I think we lost her. She must be going. I think she was going to say, I must be gone. And she is.
Yep. But I bet she would have said, wait a minute.
I bet she would have said, Mr. Durante, you're on, please.
Yep.
Good night. Good night. Good
night.
It's time to say
good night. Good night, GW.
Good night. What more than
night, Cheryl,
a good night. We've had a few
good
laughs,
night, Brother Crib.
And it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same.
Oh, it's good night, Dave.
Yeah. Night, Cheryl. Night,
night.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
It's in Westchester, Ohio.
Practice for next week.
And now, folks, it's time to say goodnight. We sincerely appreciate your patronage and hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment.
And don't drive off with the speakers.
Come back again soon. Good night.
Bye. Again, good night. Oh, man.